movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
I'm delighted to say to discuss our artisanal cinema product this week, we have Esther McCarthy and Dean McGuinness to talk about home-knitted beers. Good afternoon to you both. Today, though, Dean, is big day for you, International Beer Day.
International Beer Day. The whole world comes to a stop for today, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it was stopped anyway, so that's pretty much a damn square.
It was easier.
In a non-COVID world, what would happen on International Beer Day?
There's a number of days now popping up for different styles as well. So International Beer Day is the kind of general one for all things. Some people argue that every day is Beer Day, and then International Beer Day is just one day in particular among them. But yeah, I think they've got an International IPA Day. Guinness pushed hard on a stout day and kind of tried to push it into a stout week. Ongoing. There's usually an excuse pretty much every day. But
right, okay. Yeah. So there's no specific. It's just everybody gets a day. And nothing really might happen.
There is. I think that they sometimes have events. I haven't heard of any events going on at the moment. It kind of almost passed me by this year because everything is so topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of there. But I expect that people will try to do some things virtually.
And you're going to give us four beers to drink today. Is that correct?
We're tasting four beers, and we are asking and answering the ultimate question about beer today.
Right. Is this what do beer and bicycles have in common?
No, that's the other question that we're going to be answering.
You can hear the answers coming in already, can't you, Dean? Yeah.
The answer to that question is related to and relevant to the ultimate beer question.
Right. Okay. Is that the ultimate beer question?
That's the other ultimate beer question. What beers and bicycles have in common is the beer style that we're tasting today.
Right, okay.
So we're tasting a Radler, and Radler is German for cyclist. And the style was designed for people who cycle bikes, and it's effectively a shandy.
Right.
So it's a combination of a fruity soft drink and a thing, or fruit juice and a beer. Normally between 2-3%, so that people can ride their bike and have a beer.
All right, okay.
But this one is a bit above normal for a Radler and a little bit below average. It's 4%. And we've got four different flavours. We've got strawberry lemonade, watermelon, grapefruit and peach mango. And the reason for the four is because we'd be having a look at the ultimate beer question, which is, what is a good beer?
Whoa, Dean, that's a big one.
That's serious.
Up there with what's the meaning of life and stuff.
42 is the,
the answer. There's two texts in front of me answering the question, what do beer and bicycles have in common? One says the pedals. The other one says the chain reaction. That's from Tony.
Okay.
He puts that in rather. Very clever. Very clever, Tony. You're thinking there. Good afternoon, Esther. We are talking about two movies today. One of the movies, though, that we're not going to be talking about today, even though Esther wanted to talk about it, was this movie that's based on the book The Secret. And weirdly enough, Esther thought really hard about reviewing this movie about The Secret, but it didn't happen.
It's
a message there in the universe that maybe it's anti-magnetism at work there.
A slightly aging computer, I would think.
You didn't really want to see anyway. But
review it next week. I'm a bit intrigued.
It is the most astounding nonsense that and this woman's made millions from it.
I just
claiming
want to know
it's based on physics, you know.
I just really want to know how they turned it into a rom-com.
It's not a rom-com, is it?
It kind of is, yeah.
Oh, I read the pre-see, but it was like she's in a house, there's a storm coming, and then this attractive plumber or something turns up. It sounded like a 50 Shades of Crap.
Endings Beginnings is very good, actually. And we've got two little indies here with very big name casts on them, which is always very, really intriguing, you know, what's drawing people to do such small projects. And I could see, like, Shailene Woodley, I think she's putting in the performance of her life here, maybe has done all those young adult adaptations, is a bit tired of them and wants to kind of show her acting chops, which she does here alongside our own Jamie Dornan and Sebastian Stan. and kind of indie queen, really, Kyra Sedgwick, who's been in so many movies like this over the years. It's really good, this. It's kind of a love triangle. It's a non-judgmental love triangle movie, which you very rarely see on the big screen. And the female character is the protagonist as well, so it's mostly told from her point of view. And it's nice escapist cinema, this is.
And it's a lot of it's ad-libbed, I read.
Yeah, it's very fluid in style, which will alienate some people, I think. I don't know how much of it is ad-libbed, but it's very kind of indie. We're not going down the traditional route. But I really liked this character. Is not the most, she's not the most sympathetic of people, and she's a bit of a mess, to be honest. Mm. And like normally there would be a scene where she has to cop on and sort out her life, but in a lot of in the traditional extent, that doesn't really happen here.
Yeah, that's always a risky one. To a degree, when you have an unsympathetic character, and then you know the hope is there's an arc, and then you have sympathy at the end. Watch The King of Staten Island.
Oh, isn't it great?
No, I hated him.
Oh, really?
I hated him. Every time he opened his mouth, I wanted to slap him. He was a completely unsympathetic character who was convinced of his own charm, and the film was convinced of his charm. Must say, I wasn't.
I thought he was gas. No, I have to say.
I think he deserved everything he got and shouldn't have got anything at the end. And it was,
he's a divisive character in life and in that film, to be fair.
He is, apparently, But and I really didn't know that much about him beforehand, but I just found him annoying. I didn't find him funny.
And you couldn't get on board with anything
else. So I couldn't get on board with anything else, even though I knew, you know, because it wasn't a totally unexpected story arc, really. And had everything else was in place, it was just him. And it's an astounding thing, really.
I knew nothing about him. I actually had to go and do a bit of research after seeing the film. So I wonder, are you better coming to it with none of his baggage?
Yeah.
Because I just thought, who is this guy? He's absolutely gas and he's a disaster, like, but I just thought he was very funny.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of elements there, apparently. Or his father was a firefighter and all that kind of stuff. All that stuff
actually died in 9/11, but they didn't bring that. They thought that might take away from the story by bringing that element in, but his dad actually did not die in 9/11.
Which is, there's baggage. Right, and the Peanut Butter Falcon.
This is lovely as well. Just when you think you've got, you know, you've judged Shia LaBeouf and you know what he's about, off he goes and makes a really charming little American indie.
Well, I'm glad, because wasn't he going a bit nuts?
Going a bit nuts, and was actually filming this when he was arrested. I think it was a drunken disorderly behaviour last year when he was shooting this. Just to see his performance in it. Now, he is a misfit in it. He is a bit of a misfit in it, but he's very good in it. And I liked this. It deals with, I suppose, what could have been a mawkish subject in a dignified way, but also not in a patronising way. So the central character is a young man who has Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood is not good at doing stuff like this generally. But he wants to be a wrestler, and he's living in a nursing home because there's no proper care facility for him. So he's living with all these elderly people and he's kind of fed up. And I like, you get to see his personality as well. It's not about the disability here. Like, he's quite a reserved character. And he's a no-nonsense kind of guy. So he decides to just leg it one night, get a breakout nursing home and travel across several states to get to this place where his all-time hero, who's a wrestler, former wrestler, played by Thomas Hayden Church from Sideways, who better, he runs a wrestling school, and he decides, I'm done with the nursing home, I'm going to become a wrestler, and that's it. Along the way, he meets Shia LaBeouf, who's a petty criminal, probably not the best road movie buddy you should have, but the crack they get up to is something else then.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds very sweet. Right, a couple of texts on films, giving out, of course. Luke says, watch Black Panther for the first time. That and Captain Marvel are the only Marvel movies I had not seen. People absolutely raved about Black Panther. I have to say, I was let down. There just wasn't much of a plot. All very tame and, dare I say, a bit boring. Graphics were great. Acting was great, but the story let them down, I thought. Says Luke, I would agree
with that. Yeah. I would agree with that. I think the acting, the performances were great, and I love that it got made. Of course, how could you not love that it got made, you know? But having said that, I didn't think it was as good a film as the reviews would have suggested. I did think it was lacking in story. Great personalities in it, though. I think that's what carried it.
Paul says, I went to see the Irish movie Broken Law during the week after hearing the positive review on last week's show. I always try and support Irish and was hopeful that the movie would in some part match the glowing review. You can see what's coming, really. Alas, it did not. It was very formulaic and had so many plot holes. Why did the two brothers and mum have completely different accents? They might have been from different parts of the country. That might have explained it. Why did the brothers feel such loyalty to each other when they clearly had nothing in common? Because they were brothers. How could a single member of the Gardaí not get a loan from his local credit centre? Because Gardaí are very poorly paid in a dangerous job. I haven't seen the film, just guessing. There are basic errors which completely take the viewer away from the story, says Paul. Right. But then again, if the brothers had nothing to do with each other and if that guard had got the loan and settled down with his, you know, house in Monaster Evan, there'd be no story.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Monaster Evan.
Yeah, I don't know why I chose Monaster Evan, but there you go. Right, let's move on to our first beer of the day, Dean. Our first two beers of the day.
Two beers, yeah.
Right.
So what we've got is we've got four Radlers, all in cans. Cans are getting quite popular because there's a better understanding of the value of cans. They can protect the beer very well. All four of them are Radlers, so they're a combination of a beer base, which in this case is a lager, and then in this case a fruit juice. So sometimes it's a lemonade or something like that. Mm. In other instances, it's fruit juice. The first two that we're tasting is the reddish one, which is strawberry lemonade.
Okay.
And the second one is watermelon. And from a flavour point of view, it's quite straightforward to review them because the strawberry lemonade tastes like...
Strawberry lemonade, it does. Yeah, it does indeed. Yeah.
Now, what you've got, and on the aroma of it, it's quite interesting. You get strawberry juice and also strawberry pips. It has a really nice kind of natural strawberry taste, like biting into a ripe strawberry. There's a little bit of lemon juice, and the lemon juice isn't hugely acidic, and it's kind of reminiscent of traditional lemonade. So with traditional lemonade, where you've got a combination of lemon juice and sugar, the sugar balances out the acidity of the lemon juice and gives you a balance. The watermelon, the two things about watermelon when you're eating the physical fruit is that it can be quite fibrous, which doesn't translate into a liquid because it's kind of hard to understand. But it's very kind of mouth-watering kind of explosion.
Yeah, the thing is like it smells of watermelon actually, even before you sip it.
And we're doing a huge amount of esters. All of these flavours are esters. So fruit flavours, the family of fruit flavours are esters. And in all cases, when you're getting those fruity flavours, you're getting them in your nose. So even when you taste them, the aroma is going back down the back of your throat and back up into your nose and being detected in your nose. Mm. Now, the ultimate question about beer is, what is a good beer? And with these beers, what you've got, if you talk to any beer expert, what they talk about in beer is balance. And that's the other answer to what do cyclists and or bicycles and beer have in common, that balance is important with both of them. What you've got with a beer is that if you've got a good beer, it has good balance. But that implies that all beers should be exactly the same, because when you think of balance, you think of a midpoint and everything kind of perfectly balanced. Now, in reality, most beers are balanced, but they have something dominant. So if you think about it, kind of a perfect seesaw with exactly the same length on either side, if you move the seesaw over to one side, then you've got a long length on one side, but there's very little weight on it. And on the other side, you need more weight. So if you've got a stout, for example, you'll have a lot of weight of dark malt flavours, coffee and chocolate and roasty flavours. And that'll be the dominant flavour. If they overpower the beer, it tastes horrible. If they're balanced and if there's other flavours there so that they don't overpower the beer, then it tends to be a good beer. But ultimately, the answer to what is a good beer is what the person thinks is a good beer. So part of the reason for bringing along four flavours, if for some reason that you absolutely hate strawberry or watermelon or grapefruit or peach mango, the second I say that, oh, we've got a peach mango beer, if you've had a terrible experience with peach at some point in your life, it's going to be highly unlikely that you'll like the beer, even if it's an amazing tasting beer.
Yeah.
Because once you've got this idea in your head, you're going to have an immediate negative reaction to the flavour.
It's never going to work.
So, yeah. Really. So the challenge that I always have is that the answer, I was at a dinner a number of months ago with some people that I know kind of indirectly, and they know me as the beer guy from News Talk, and I ordered a beer, and as I was drinking the beer, there were seven eyes all looking at me, and three of them said, "Is that a good beer?" And I'm there.
You know, and the other four are all kind of, you know, is he going to say it's a good beer? And the answer is, it depends on what you like.
People hate that answer, though. They want something definitive. They really do. Because, like, you know, Gene and the wine people say the same thing. If you like it, it's fine. Yeah. But
now, the job then on my side is to try to describe the flavors. And when people hear the flavors, if they have a positive reaction to those flavors, they're more likely to like the beer. If they have a negative reaction to those flavors, they're more likely to not like the beer. Mm. And then I've given them the answer without telling them whether it's a good or a bad beer, because the answer is, this is what the beer is. It's a little bit like the challenge that Esther has. You know, if you're doing a sci-fi film, and if you don't particularly like sci-fi films, you're describing, this is what the film is. And then people who love sci-fi films go, oh, I gotta see it. And my wife would go, dear God almighty, what kind of a git goes to see that?
Mm-hmm. but you could say, we'll keep going with the sci-fi films. Some sci-fi films are better than others. And there's generally a consensus. So isn't there generally a consensus about beers as well? Some beers are like, bleh.
There is. There's two sides to it. One side is that you can generally agree on what is a bad beer.
Yeah.
So if something has happened that is inappropriate to a beer, if it's got infected, then the types of flavors that you'll get in an infected beer are butter, butterscotch, vinegar, sour milk. And when you put them together, they taste what I would describe as bile. They taste horrible. But if you take those individual flavors, a beer called Duval that we've reviewed quite a long time ago on the show is an absolutely beautiful beer. It has a taste of vinegar off it. If you taste a barley wine, you'll get a taste of butter. You put those two flavors together and they're horrible. Individually, they're perfectly appropriate in some beers. So it's not that the flavors are bad by themselves. It's just that when you bring certain things together, that it's thing like if I'm kind of lying at home in bed with nobody in the room and I'm completely naked, that is not offensive to anybody. If I was like that here, it would be horrible.
I've got an image in my head.
I don't know what you want me to say in response to that, Dean.
Yeah, let's all agree. It's the easiest thing that I think. So it depends on what's appropriate, what the situation is, and so on. And at the end of the day, you can agree on what's a bad beer, because it's got flavors in it that shouldn't be in there. Yeah. And even the brewer would say, yeah, that's bad beer. What is an excellent beer is something that a beer expert understands is really, really good for the style. But that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be an excellent beer for everybody. It just means that it's it's like the Mona Lisa, a superb picture.
Oh, no, absolutely. And Duval, for instance, is, you know, some people love it. Some people, it's just too much for them.
Yeah. And they just can't take it. So, yeah. So the answer as to what is a good beer, it's the proper answer is it's down to the individual. But the ultimate answer is if it's well balanced and if the flavors that are in it are flavors that appeal to you, then hopefully it'll be a good beer.
Rachel, who basically liked to live her entire life dipped in chocolate, says, you were talking about fruity beers, but is there any dessert type beers like salted caramel or chocolatey? I have a sweet tooth and this could be lovely. She says, well, there are. Well, these actually, Rachel, you might like
massively
these.
Fruity beers. Yeah. Generally, fruit beers will have, you know, the distinct flavour of the fruit of them. And in the case of these Radlers, they're lager based. So you've got a quite clean base to it. Another base that they use are wheat beers, which gives a slightly crisper flavour. But again, the fruit is dominant. And then in other instances, they'll do lambic beers. These beers should work well with a scoop of ice cream as well. If you put them in, we've done beer float in the past.
We have,
That works really well. In terms of chocolate beers, there are chocolate beers. Often chocolate stouts are the most popular because the flavours in stout are appropriate to it. Another beer that I've tasted in the past is a beer called Chocolate Bock, which is brewed without any chocolate whatsoever. It's from Meisels and Friends, and it's the most chocolatey beer that I've ever tasted, but they've just achieved the chocolate by using dark malts and got all of the chocolate flavour from malts. It's brewed according to the Reinheitsgebot. So it only has malt, water, hops and yeast in the beer, but it is incredibly chocolatey. And then in terms of something salty, there's a style of beer called Gosse, which is another sour style of beer, but it's particularly salty. And if you have that with kind of a caramel ice cream or something like that, there's a kind of a salt caramel thing that works very well, that combination of flavours. And a Gosse with a kind of a sticky toffee pudding dessert, you get that kind of combination. It works really, really well.
There you go, Rachel, many options there. Can the beer guy recommend good gluten-free beer? I drink Huffy, H-U-F-I, at the moment, and would like something different. I have tried Peroni gluten. gluten-free but want to try something else?
Yeah, the answer to this is another walk the fence answer, because there are two types of people that drink gluten-free beer. There's people who have to drink gluten-free beer because they have celiac disease and they have an intolerance to gluten. And then there are people that choose to drink gluten-free beer. For the people who choose to drink gluten-free beer, there's a couple out there that are quite nice. If you like beer, but you're looking for a beer without gluten in it. Mm-hmm. So Scarborough Fair and Marmalade Porter, both from Wold Top, are beery beers. You know, it's an IPA and it's a Marmalade Porter. It's a porter with a kind of a marmalade-y flavour to it. And if you like beer, then they're absolutely excellent beers if you like those styles.
But if you were a celiac, you couldn't drink those?
No, you can. They're gluten-free. Okay. Gluten-free. And it's quite unusual. A lot of the gluten-free beers are kind of a pale ale or a lager. Mm. And I think now, if you're not a beer drinker, you probably haven't been drinking a lot of beer. If you're not able to drink it because of having celiac disease. So then you've got beers like Against the Grain, or there's two very straightforward ones, GFA, GFL, which is gluten-free ale and gluten-free lager from Hamilton, that are very good beers. And the thing about somebody who hasn't been able to drink beer for a long time, if they're starting out and drinking beers, styles that are less challenging make more sense, because to get to an IPA, you need to kind of drink a few different beers and develop your flavour for bitterness and so on, and over time then you start appreciating IPA. If you come along to somebody with an IPA at 6% with a lot of bitterness and a lot of hop character and they've never drunk a beer before in their lives, they're likely to kind of think, oh, that's a bit too much for me.
Right, okay. Is it possible to buy Dorada beer from Tenerife here in Dublin? Derek wants to know.
Oh, I'm not too sure. I haven't seen it. I think that that might be a Spanish one that makes it over to Tenerife. I'm not too sure if it's brewed on Tenerife, but it could be. There are a couple of Spanish beers that make it into the country. O'Hara's have teamed up with a Spanish brewery and they work together. And they have their beers in, if you're in around the IFSC, the Estrella beers. And they actually have a good gluten-free beer as well, Estrella Dam. But I'm not too sure if that one is in the country.
Right. Dubbo has, well, it's more a fine dining question, really. Not exactly a beer question, as Dubbo admits, but I will be drinking beer with this. So Friday night is always chipper night, and I always have a chip butty with the chips. I have butter, mayo and ketchup in the chip sandwich, after which I'm rushed to hospital, no doubt, Dubbo. But I've been told by a friend today that I'm doing it wrong. Butter or mayo, not both. Is it wrong to have a chip butty? Like, it's wrong on every level, Dubbo. I find the salt and vinegar cuts through the butter and mayo, and the beer even changes the taste again. It's a delicacy, if you ask me. I'll be drinking it with some pale ale, for your information, to bring the beer back into it. Wow. Well,
yeah.
Okay.
There could be 20 minutes of conversation
on
that.
Yeah, could be there. I'm sure many people will have feelings on what you just told us, Dubbo. What a movie would like to do first, Esther?
I really want a chip butty right now, but let's review endings, beginnings and
such. Okay, yes, certainly endings. Endings, beginnings, coming up after this.
Just want to respect you and him, and don't want to blur any lines.
Okay. Frank's one of my oldest friends. I met him 17 years ago when I moved here. You know, he's one of those people, he's the life and soul of every party. He's so fun, and you need him around most of the time, but then... Then, you know...
What?
He's unreliable. He's volatile. He can be messy. He owes me money. But I love him. I really do. I f***ing love him. I feel like the last girlfriend he had, she kind of drowned in him.
She drowned in him?
There you go. She drowned in him. That's endings, beginnings. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. So that's your man from
Jamie Dornan.
Once
interviewed him, he had a head cold and he was dying of a hangover, and he still looked like Jamie Dornan. What can I say? Really nice guy though, and he's choosing well. I think he's choosing well, doing mixing up the bigger films with little indies like this. And sure, why wouldn't you have him playing his own accent, even though it's set in the States? It just gives texture and layers, I think, to have characters doing their own accents anyway.
And Americans think, wow, he's amazing with the Irish accent, isn't he?
So I like this. You know what I liked about it? There's a lot of people have been trying to do comedies about female characters who are a disaster, kind of a car crash or a train wreck, literally, in Amy Schumer's case. And they don't always work. And this one isn't trying to do that. It's very funny in places. It's kind of dryly funny in places. But this is really a drama about a female character who's a car crash. And I kind of liked it for that.
Yeah.
It's very non-judgmental. It's kind of observational. But she is a bit of a mess. Like her, it's Shailene Woodley playing a woman by the name of Daphne. We learned very early on that she has broken up from a long-term relationship, four-year-long relationship. It's implied that she cheated on him, and that's at the very start of the film. So she moves back to her hometown and is kind of not in a good place, looking for a job. She's in her early 30s, looking for a job, relationship gone, living in her sister's pool house. And her family kind of gather around her and say, look, you've literally never been on your own. You've never not been in a relationship. And she admits that she doesn't like the idea of that at all.
Mm.
And they're saying, it's time you took time out. Like, just take 6 months for yourself. Sort out what you want to do in life. That night she goes to a party and meets two fellas. One played by Jamie Dornan and one played by Sebastian Stan. They're very different characters. Jack is Dornan and he's just got a real reliability about him. And as you heard in that clip there, he kind of warns her about Frank, who's his best friend, who he's very, very fond of, but who is a bit of a misfit himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she doesn't know when she first starts seeing the two of them that they are friends, but they twig early on because they tell each other everything. And Jamie Dornan's Jack kind of says, make your mind up. And she decides to stay with him, but she starts seeing Jack on the sly, basically, and
right.
He knows it's on the sly, so he's not telling his friend anything anymore. So there is a lot of normal peopling going on, shall we say?
Okay.
But it is that kind of sexual attraction thing that you just can't say no to somebody. Like, it does really examine that and that kind of being in the moment thing. But there are, you know, there are implications for everyone involved, I suppose. And I just really liked it. It's a bit slowly paced. It's a bit in love with itself, like a lot of American indies can be. But I kind of forgave it because there's proper character development going on here and proper. It's really told from her perspective as well. And she kind of says at one stage, you know, there's things I love about both of them. Why can't I see both of them? So it's really about that kind of whether monogamy is a good thing or whether it's...
Okay, well, that's an interesting thing.
It is interesting.
Because the other elements you describe are kind of... breaks up, she's a bit of a wreck. You know,
and it kind of forgives her for her poor choices in a way that maybe films do with male characters that we don't get to see with women a lot. So I kind of liked it for that. Eye candy, ahoy, like three beautiful looking actors as well. It's easy on the eye, let's say.
Okay.
And it's an easy enough watch as well, though you will maybe lose patience sometimes with the very fluid, unlinear style of it, which I would normally like in a film, but it doesn't really work here. It kind of distracted me a little. And they text each other a lot, and the texts come up on screen as well, which is a no-no for me.
Going, what?
It just doesn't work for me.
What does that one say? Yeah.
I'm here to watch film to get away from my phone. I don't want to see texts.
Phony McRingring says, Jamie Dornan is such a bad actor. That's it. That's all I have to say.
I wouldn't agree. I think he's great.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Our hashtag, by the way, I forgot to mention it, is Nosy Movies. This is following the piece we did earlier on in the week, that New York photographer who takes photographs of people's text messages. So if I get a minute, I'll actually have a look at some of them. There's millions of them, I should say. And a lot of people texting in, by the way, to say that they really enjoyed Peanut Butter Falcon that we have yet to talk about. Michael Enderry says, I saw Peanut Butter Falcon at the Foyle Film Festival in November. As a disabled person myself, I was interested in how the character of Zach was portrayed, as quite often films with a disability as a theme are quite patronising. I was pleasantly surprised by this film and on the whole how Zach was portrayed as anyone else following their dreams would be. So that's good to hear.
Yeah.
A couple of comments on that Chip Butty text we had earlier on from Nobbo. One person says it sounds divine. Someone else says leave out the ketchup and you're on to a winner. That's a divisive point, especially for Dean, who, as we found out during the commercial break, has an encyclopedic knowledge of ketchup. I kid you not. I'm scared to even ask him, even look at him right now, and he'd be off there. Someone was asking about gluten-free beers. My girlfriend swears my Dora Dam gluten-free beer. She prefers a lighter Blackhead Brewery, I think they're called, in Cork. Have Kinsale 101. I try them out for her. She always goes back to Dora Dam as a gluten-free beer. Okay. And the another suggestion on that is 1601 Lager from Black's Brewery in Kinsale. Is gluten-free. I think maybe, yes, somebody called it 101. Someone called it 1601. Maybe it's 1,000 years, you know. Let's split the difference. And in terms of what do beers and bicycles have in common, Frank says, being locked is an indication of correct and frequent usage. And someone else says, what has a bad beer and a bicycle got in common? They're both hard on the backside. We'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Our hashtag today is Nosy Movies. Look who's been talking to your one, being one example of that. Dean and Esther are still with us in the studio. We've had two fruity beers. We're going to have two more in just a second. We've talked about the movie Endings Beginnings that Esther quite liked, it should be said. We also discovered that Dean has an encyclopedic knowledge of ketchup, and someone has actually texted in a ketchup question, so it's her own fault. Ask Dean, what's the difference between catsup and ketchup?
Oh, God almighty. I don't have no idea.
Ah! Ah, well, that's sure. That's better than you. You can come in naked into the studio anytime.
It's the only
that's,
way I'll be
that's
able to,
far more shocking. Really,
only way
that
I'll
you
be able to achieve
that.
Entertainment from now on. Yes. I've lost all my credibility.
Right, well, let's move on to our second two beers, Dean.
Yeah, so what we've got is the peach mango and the grapefruit variants. Now, the thing about peach as a flavour is that it can be quite luscious, quite rich. And what's interesting about the peach mango that they've done is that you get that luscious richness on the aroma, and it triggers a kind of a memory of a velvety mouthfeel. But it's a lighter beer as you taste it, so it's not a kind of a very rich cloying beer. Mm. With the grapefruit, what I found with it was, and I'll talk a little bit about balance about all four of the beers in a second, the grapefruit, you get a distinct grapefruit flavour on it. I found it tasted a bit like Lilt, which suggests a pineapple grapefruit combination.
Yes, the totally tropical taste. Yeah. Racist that, sorry.
But what you've got, an interesting thing, I mentioned balance being a critical thing in beer. And obviously you've got strawberry and lemonade and you've got that. But with three of these beers, all of them except for the grapefruit, they're using apple juice as well. And the apple juice helps to provide a foundation and a base for the beer. Now, you'll pick up a little bit of apple in it if you hunt for it.
Yeah.
With the grapefruit, they're using lemon juice. So the lemon juice is probably what's combining with something to give that impression of grapefruit. And one of we did a tasting this morning with... three people who are all beer sommelier, and one of the people was finding that the grapefruit one gave him impressions of lemon meringue. So there's a bit of sweetness in it, and then you've got lemon zest and lemon juice and lemon meringue, and it was that lemon juice coming through. But it, again, in one of the reasons for bringing in all four is that I'm guessing that if I go around the studio that people will probably have a different preference out of the four of them. And then some people just generally on fruit beers kind of go, oh, you know, I don't have a sweet tooth, or I really have a sweet tooth and I love all four of them. There's thing, but it comes down to, you know, what is the flavour that you like starting out, and then the question is, when you taste it, does that give you a good impression of that flavour? You know, so if you've got huge expectations for watermelon and it doesn't give you a good watermelon flavour, you might be disappointed. But if you really like strawberry or lemonade and you taste that one, you might go, oh wow, that's amazing, you know, if it comes through.
Yeah, I think I like the mango one, the last one there, the best.
The peach mango?
Yeah.
I'm on the strawberry lemonade, and what I thought I wouldn't like as much is the grapefruit. Grapefruit can have acidity and a certain amount of bitterness in it. And sometimes I find, especially with pink grapefruit, the kind of breakfast grapefruit, that it can be quite bitter and quite acidic. And I found with this one that they balanced it out with a certain amount of sweetness, so you don't get as much kind of intense bitterness and acidity on the palate, but you get the distinct grapefruit aroma. So you've got the sense of grapefruit all right, but not kind of tipping it in that far down the thing. So I found the grapefruit much nicer than I thought it was, because I'm not a fan of grapefruit, and I thought it was a good grapefruit experience.
It does all beg the question, though. You know, if you blindfolded someone and got them to taste it, they wouldn't go, this is beer we're drinking.
And again, on the balance side of things, what you've got here is the fruit is the dominant flavour.
Yeah.
Like if somebody gave you a cocktail that was carbonated, you would not be able to distinguish it. The one thing about the beer as the base is that there's a certain amount of bitterness in the base. And while you don't taste that bitterness, what it does is it balances the sweetness. So where sweetness can be quite satiating, if you drink something that's very sweet, it can be cloying and filling and overpowering. When you put bitterness or acidity with sweetness, it makes it more drinkable. So the bitterness of the beer balances out the sweetness of the fruit, and you find then that you can drink more of the beer without it being overpowering. If you're drinking the same quantity of fruit juice, you'd probably find it quite a lot.
There seems to be lots of gluten-free beers. All 9 White Deer beers are gluten-free, including the stouts.
They're from Ballyverney, and they do a great job on their beers. Really good job on the gluten-free beers.
The Stag Bawn range of beers made in Ballyverney are gluten-free. The same thing must obviously be. And medical question now, Dean. I love beer, but I find lately that it gives me restless leg and I can't sleep even after drinking a small quantity of beer. Any thoughts?
Talk to a doctor who
is qualified
to answer medical
questions. You know what it is? It's not beer. It's because you're old. That's why. That's speaking of someone who's going to the doctor next Tuesday for specifically that reason. The appointment was made for me. Let's put it that way. Right, let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is the Peanut Butter Falcon. Here's the clip.
Rule number 1, don't slow me down. Rule number 2, I'm in charge and you're going to carry your own weight.
You are in charge.
That's right.
Maybe we should. Maybe we should have our own secret handshake.
What kind of secret handshake? For what?
Bud, dude, friends.
Bud, dude, friends handshake?
All right, yeah.
Let's go. Hurry up. All right. 3 of those. 4 of those. 1 of those. Now what? Like that.
Yeah.
Only when special shit happens, though, all right?
Yeah, special thing.
Special things, you don't curse?
No.
Why don't you curse?
Because I don't.
Okay, come on.
You are in charge.
Exactly.
There you go, right. Okay, that's the Peanut Butter Falcon. And is it a spoiler to tell us where that title comes from?
Not really. Let's say he wants to be a wrestling character.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I liked this. It has a simplicity to it that some people will dismiss as slight because we don't often get films like that anymore.
Mm.
But I liked it for that. And actually the characters have a whole thing where they reference Mark Twain at one stage. And it did actually feel like if Mark Twain wrote a film about these characters or a story about these characters, this would be it.
Okay. All right.
So that's kind of the flavour it has.
Yeah, because I was wondering, would you look at it and go, would it remind you of Rain Man slightly?
No. I think the great thing here is, and there's been a lot of conversation about this and diversity in film lately. And the great thing is that it's a character who has Down syndrome, who's playing the character with Down syndrome. So you've no Tom Cruise, Dustin Hoffman baggage, I suppose,
you know? Yeah.
And it's
people aren't acting.
People aren't acting. And it was very fashionable there for a while for actors to play characters with disabilities and get Oscar nominations. And it all got a bit Oscar baity at a stage, you know. It's not only is he cast in it, the actual concept of the film was built around this character, this man by the name of Zach Gottsagen. It's produced by the producers of Little Miss Sunshine, and they met him at a camp. They were doing a camp for disabled artists, and they met him at that and were so impressed by him that they started crafting this little story around him.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And then just whatever they got right at the script stage, they got a big name cast to act in support. So you have like Dakota Johnson, Shia LaBeouf and Thomas Hayden Church in supporting characters here. So it's really sweet like that. He is he's a young man who's Down syndrome. He lives in a nursing home. He has no family. He lives in a nursing home because there's no suitable care facility for him.
Mm.
So he's living with Bruce Dern pops up in the cameo in a cameo. And
wow.
Bruce Dern is so good at doing grumpy old man late in his career. Mm. I watch it forever. You did the great Alexander Payne movie as well a few years ago. But he's kind of grumpy old man who keeps saying, "Will you turn off the wrestling? I don't want to watch that wrestling video yet again." But Zach loves wrestling and he has a dream to attend a wrestling school run by his favourite star, who may have the best wrestling name ever. He's called the Saltwater Redneck.
Right.
And he's
that doesn't make any sense even.
He's played by Thomas Hayden Church, lives several states away, and Zach just decides, you know, I'm fed up of being in this nursing home. I'm 20. I want to have a life. I'm going to take off, and I'm going to go on this little adventure. No money, of course, never been out on his own before. So they're very, very real concerns for him, you know. But early on in his journey, Dakota Johnson's playing a nurse who's absolutely adores him, but has kind of always wrapped him up in cotton wool. So is really struggling with the fact that he's escaped and she's kind of gone off and hunt for him in a lot of trouble potentially as well, of course. But he kind of runs into this misfit, a kind of a local hoodlum played by Shia LaBeouf, who steals a boat to cross a lake and finds that he's asleep in the boat. Mm. So the two of them are kind of stuck with each other. Off they go fishing, drinking, avoiding being shot by random people whose land they trespass on and cause trouble with. And it's just a lovely little road trip adventure, but it has a delicacy, a touch, I think, in dealing with disability that I really liked about it. It doesn't patronise. It's not cuddly either. He's just the kind of man who wants to live his own life, you know. So I thought it was really sweet for that. And the performance is all elevated, of course. And if you love just that easy American road trip movie with those beautiful landscapes as well, it's an easy watch, you know, it's a calming watch. And it's just a nice film.
Okay, that's so many people, since you mentioned the name, have texted in to say they saw it and thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it.
I should say it's landed on Netflix this week.
Right, if you're looking for
it. And that's probably why people have seen it as well.
Ah, right. And Endings Beginnings, that's in one of those old-fashioned
cinemas. It's to stream. It's a renter, that one. It's on various streaming platforms, but you have to pay a rental fee for it.
Okay. Good stuff. Finally, Noel says, I picked up a beer I've never seen before in Lidl called Golden Drack. When I got home, I discovered it's 10.5%. I presume I can wave goodbye to the toothache. I think we can all reasonably say that's the case.
It's probably Golden Drack 9000, so that would be the quadruple. They
Golden
have,
Drack 9000. It makes it sound like a killer robot.
The original Golden Drack is also 10.5%, so just if he decides he wants to look for variety, there's a second one that he can try as well.
Yeah, if you can even remember the name by the time you finish that bottle. Right, Dean and Esther, thank you both very much. That's it from us for today and for this week. Indeed, Mark's up next on News Talk. Our production team today, Aisling O'Reilly, Michael Quilligan, Anne-Marie Kane, Simon Tierney and Claire Collins. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a lovely weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.